If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Eyebrows nearly grown back. Welcome to the Completely Unnecessary Podcast.
You're gonna cut that part out about me talking about fanoodles? It's ridiculous.
For Tuesday, July 28th, 2020. Yeah, we're not going to talk about slimy fanoodles. Alongside Ian Ferguson.
We just did.
I'm Pat Contry. On the show today, we got lots of fun topics. G4 is returning. The Analog Pocket was announced. Lots of Nintendo leakage going on. Joe Rogan saying video games are a waste of time. We have the latest Heritage auction results for video games and a Patreon poll topic and maybe a scumbag seller. Ian, how was your weekend?
I don't know.
Okay, great.
I have no idea how my weekend was. It was fairly non-existent.
Okay, we got merch at ultimatenintendo.com. We got the enamel pins for the CU podcast and the Pixel Pat hairpin, or the combo deal on both and the certain NES Super Nintendo guidebooks. The Not For Resale documentary, Ian, is officially out of print for the first run on Blu-ray, but you can still watch it, download DRM free at ultimatenintendo.com, the digital version, or on Amazon Prime. You can rent it or watch it there.
Wait, you're sold out?
Sold out.
Sold out.
WCW sold out.
Sold out. Sold out.
But we're reprinting them there. So there you go. What was I going to say? Real quick, I'm also Cameo, cameo.com/PatContry. For your wedding needs, to propose to someone, which only happened once. I'm not sure they used it. Or to, you know, happy birthday or to roast or whatever.
But I can tell you how my weekend was.
Okay, Ian.
Panzer Paladin came out last week, and it's really, really damn good. You saw the trailer for it.
I played it at PAX.
It's so delightful. It came out last week. That's actually something that I did this weekend.
I talked to the devs about it, yeah.
Wow!
What?
Nothing.
This isn't the first time like I told you about
Yes, I know,
game.
And I told you about the game. I'm saying it came out last week, and
okay,
you can finally play it, as opposed to just talking to the devs about it. You can purchase it and play it,
okay,
and it's very, very good.
All right, advertise
good.
The game. Okay, go for it.
That's what I'm doing.
It's
I'm
like
saying it's good.
It's an 8/16-bit style graphics. It's like in between. It's very nice. There's different weapon upgrades. It's like a combination of a little bit of Metal Storm and Metal Mech, because you can jump out of your mech and you can fight without the mech and then jump back in, so it's pretty unique. It's fun.
You can. Jumping out is not the main thing. There's little segments that require it, but the neat thing about it is it does have a weapon system where you can hold up to 4 weapons in your inventory, in your main inventory at a time, and then you have a larger inventory, and you can destroy the weapon all the weapons have durability, and you can destroy the weapon at any time to cast a spell, so to heal or to reflect damage or anything like that. So there's a fun bit of strategy in there, you know, whittling down the wet weapon to like the last little bit you can use, and then timing it so you can use the magic properly.
And then you get wacky weapons like a hockey stick, I remember.
Yeah, and there's an entire thing where you can, like, you know, you can literally go into, like, a paint program and make all your own weapons.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
Yeah, so, no, I like to talk about games that I'm enjoying. And, that one's really good. I normally do not bite super hard on the heavy retro aesthetic. I'm not normally sold on that, but I really like Tribute's other games, so I was like, fuck it, I'll give it a go, and it was really good. So that's actually what I did this week, and I'm like, I know I spent most of the weekend playing something, but my brain is foggy.
The little pilot's adorable. The little cape, little helmet, you can swing around like Bionic Commando a little bit with a little whip action. It's like in-between 8- and 16-bit style, which is popular for indie games, since the palette on the NES is so limited that it'd be hard to pull off some of the stuff. And it's cool. There's, like, the Zelda sort of thrust downward thrust.
Yeah, no, it's the cool. Combat very much is reminiscent of Zelda 2. A lot of the enemies are reminiscent of the... what the hell do they call them in Zelda 2? The Dark Nuts? There's a lot of enemies yes. with, like, the shields up. It's very, very...
2D shield and sword Zelda 2, yeah. combat, which is... I like that in Zelda 2. Some people didn't like that. I love Zelda 2.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
It's not a real Zelda game. Well, you're just an asshole.
Your mom's not a real Zelda game.
Yeah.
Moving on!
4.5 stars, according to Ian in a certain NES guidebook.
Great game.
Could have gave it 5, but, you know, 4.5 is still pretty good. All right. Real quick, the Mario Marathon is coming back July 30th to raise money for Child's Play Charity. It's one of the oldest sort of annual charity events.
It predates us by a few years.
The bus one. God.
Desert Bus for Hope.
God, I can't believe it. My brain just froze on that. So, yeah, it's been around for a while there. And go to MarioMarathon.com. There you unlock Mario games they play. And this is a socially distanced edition. And then, worst case scenario, me and Ian do the 10th annual NES Marathon with just me and him. If we can't get folks down to do it, we'll just be a smaller group. There I buy us some COVID tests. How much do they cost? Can we get COVID tests done? I mean, does that cost a amount of money? I don't know. I'll look into that. There should be an over-the-counter swab solution or something. Anyway, Rocket League, Ian, is now free to play.
F2P.
Our local small-time dev goes big and gets paid off by Epic Games. And now they're going free, probably because Epic Games says, yeah, there's a way to monetize this for free to play, and we'll make a ton of money like Fortnite, which isn't shocking.
I'm honestly surprised it took this long. Something like Rocket League, cars, skins, all that stuff seems ideal for the Fortnite sort of...
treatment?
Yeah, microtransaction model.
Core gameplay will remain the same according to this release here, but we were refining the main menus to make exploring the game easier. Plus, we're revamping and improving major features like tournaments, challenges, and introducing cross-platform progression. Oh, that's pretty cool. So that means you can use the same profile on different consoles and go back and forth.
That is something that Fortnite does. If you, I think it's PlayStation that you couldn't, or maybe they fixed that. But yeah, you can log in with your account anywhere and any console that you can play the game on.
It's the future of video gaming.
Future!
Even 10 years ago, we would have said, you're mad. You could play Xbox versus computer versus PlayStation. What? Yeah, so it's going to be an Epic Games Store and PC at the same time it goes free to play. The version of the game will be identical to the version found on other platforms. This is less than a year later. They're doing it. It's only been, like 7-8 months that they bought them out. Psyonix Games.
I want to bring up Ayuden Chronicle real quick. It was announced earlier this week. They needed $509,639 for their goal. Again, I still think that's one of those goals that simply exists to prove that there's a market for it. You can't develop a game of this size on that sort of budget. But it's at $1 million. I'm watching it go up right now. $1,883,501 with 31 days to go. I wanted to mention it real quick because Ayuden Chronicle is essentially going to be a spiritual successor to Suikoden by the same developer. This is something that we're seeing a lot of lately. Sometimes it works well, sometimes it doesn't.
Lately.
But it's good. I'm happy to see these creators get out from under the thumbs of bigger companies and be able to do what they do best.
Sure.
It didn't work out so well with Kaiji Inafune and Mighty Number 9, but it kind of opened the doors. We ended up getting Igarashi doing Bloodstained, which actually ended up very, very good. Mm-hmm. Now we're getting it with Ayuden Chronicle, and then on the larger scale, obviously Hideo Kojima left Konami and started his own company.
Sure.
Making his own games, not really doing Metal Gear Solid anymore.
The fallen angels of Konami.
But yeah, yes. Kaiji Inafune was Capcom, but yes, a lot of them are coming from Konami, and it's good to see. I'm actually not particularly familiar with Suikoden. I did play a bit of the first one and I enjoyed it, but I know a lot of people have been waiting for this series to kind of come back into its own. So I think it's exciting and worth mentioning that this is happening.
I think this is how some games are going to have sequels or spiritual sequels.
Yes.
I mean, I've been saying for years what we can have a proper ActRaiser sequel.
Well,
why did someone get to that?
The other one I wanted to mention was Bomb Funk Rush. Shit, can't remember.
Bomb Funk Rush? That's a game? Bomb Funk Rush.
I think I'm saying the name wrong, but it's wrong. But it's the one that I'm real excited about. It's essentially, yeah, Bomb Rush Cyberfunk is the name of it.
Oh, I was going to make a game called Bomb Funk Rush. That's a great name.
Bomb Rush Cyberfunk is another example. It's essentially going to be a spiritual successor to Jet Set Radio, which Sega has not been touching. That's one of my the first Jet Set Radio is one of my favorite games, floaty weird controls and all.
Spray painting.
But the style looks the same. The spirit appears to be very similar to the first Jet Set Radio.
Except you got little rocket boosters on you in this one?
Yeah. And I do think, if I'm not mistaken, I believe the guy who oversaw the original soundtrack is coming back for this one, too. Oh. So, again, if these big companies don't want to make the games that people are looking for, smaller companies will.
Yeah. Why not? I got in my mind like three games that if I had my druthers, I would like to see again because it's been so long since we had proper sequels.
Rampart? Privateer?
Yes, but there's games that sort of fill in that hole, but a proper Privateer sequel.
I don't know.
ActRaiser?
ActRaiser.
Obviously.
Sure.
And then there's like one or two more in my head, but anyway, those are the big ones that would find audiences. Like a Privateer 3 would find a pretty sizable audience if you actually made it Privateer 3 with like the same universe. I'd be on board with that. You don't get Clive Owen back, but you know, it'd be fun to get the full motion video parts back of that. Very, very Privateer 2 is fantastic.
Have you given up on actually wanting what the fuck was that crazy space one that's probably still in development? Star Citizen.
Oh, that's still...
Have you given up on that yet?
Oh, I give up.
Okay, good.
It's been 7 years.
Because I can't watch you... you get excited anymore.
No, I was excited for when they said, oh, they space... The last time we spoke about it was like 3 years ago. When they combined first-person shooters seamlessly to space combat laying up. I'm like, this is incredible. No game's ever done this before.
And no game will.
Well, they did it, but they got to do it for a whole game.
Yeah, yes.
So I don't know where they're... I have, you know what? I'll look it up on Wikipedia, Ian, because it's been a while since we talked about this.
Is it hot in here, or is it just the fact that I drank 16 ounces of regular Coke and my body is rioting?
That's probably
absolutely
what it is,
rioting. Regular Coke is disgusting.
Star Citizen has raised over $300 million as of June 2000. So that's like more than probably what the last GTA budget was, probably.
Yeah, wow.
But I mean, but that was like you're playing the parts of the game. Squadron 42, the single player game set in the universe, was initially announced in the Kickstarter, but is now intended to be a standalone product. That's the one where they got the voice acting done, like with Mark Hamill and like Gillian Anderson. So that's done. That can come out. But it sounds like the multiplayer and you know the open world, more open world stuff, is what's going to be troublesome. If it comes out, I'm all in on Star Citizen if it comes out. But it's been so long since we don't cover the updates anymore because it's like...
Too long.
I mean, it's been 6 years. Oh, crowdfunding was 2012. So, yeah, once you get to 8 years on a game, you got to come out with something. I think 8 years is like, come out with something. Otherwise, you're Duke Nukem forever at that point, which did come out, but it was disappointing to people.
It was. Atari doing a thing.
Have you played Atari today, Ian?
No, I have not.
I mentioned in the upcoming NES Punk video, wink, about Atari a little bit.
One of my neighbors gave me an Atari flashback, too.
Oh, which was that the one with the cartridge slot?
That's
or
the
no?
one where you can put a cartridge slot in it.
That's a good one, then.
It is, yeah. He was like, hey, do you... damn it, I feel bad because now his name is slipping my memory. But
Jonathan, his name is...
Jonathan. But he was like, hey, do you want this to put in the free bin? And I was like, yeah, I'll take it. And he goes, or keep it. And he's like, it's the second model. You can put a cartridge slot in it. And I was like, maybe I will.
There's no HDMI, but because that was like, what, 2005?
Yeah, I've got a tube TV. Might be fun.
You got a tube you can stick it in?
Yeah.
Cool. Well, anyway, speaking of that, so the Atari VCS is seemingly supposed to come out by the end of the year. And they're partnering with Air Console. Air Console we never mentioned before, but it's an interesting concept, especially with a competitor on the market. So what Air Console is Air Console is a streaming service to play basically. It's basically the console equivalent of Apple Arcade, where you pay like $5 a month. You get like 150 a library of 150 games that you can play on your PC or on your console. So it's an interesting concept, because that's all Atari has, obviously, at this point, is that they don't have, you know, like their own games that'll be exclusive to the console. So they got to partner with everyone else. Maybe that's a strategy that can actually work in a small way, where they basically say, yeah, no, this is just a box that kind of like a PC. We're going to come out and just say that. But it looks nice, and you can just play with some of our partners, like the Ant Stream or the Air Console. And some of the... I haven't looked into these games that much, but some of these Air Console games actually look pretty well polished.
None of them are familiar. None of them are names that I know. Doesn't mean that they're not good games. Some of them actually did look pretty cool, but it does seem to be some fairly unknown stuff.
Yeah, this Air Console thing came out of like 3 years ago, and you can get it on mobile devices right now. I think mostly Android. I think the iPhone, it's not as compatible with or whatever. But no, the games look surprisingly non-crappy on this Air Console, and I don't know what their subscriber base is or how many people have it, but I'm not saying this is the reason you should go out and buy a VCS, because I don't think anyone should go out and buy a
VCS. You shouldn't go buy a VCS.
Unless you want to slap your dick on it, like Ian wants to.
But I don't want to do that anymore. But that was an old Ian.
That was the old Ian?
That was the old Ian.
That was 8 months ago, Ian? It changed?
No, new Ian doesn't.
2020 has changed a lot of us.
It really has.
One way or another. But no, like I said, they're mobile quality or higher-end mobile quality games. That's basically what it is. And I know there's another console that wants to do that, but this one is already there. With Air Console, they have it right there.
This chair always makes me look like a gremlin.
Sit up straighter.
I can't. I don't
sit
know.
Up straight.
I mean, I am.
Lower
I feel like I
support,
am.
Ian.
I am sitting up straight. God. I feel like it always makes me look like a dumpling.
Doughy
dumpling. No, like a dumpling that you would like chicken and dumplings. Like just I'm just a wad of fucking Bisquick cooked in hot liquid.
Wow, Ian, really, you're downing yourself today.
Yeah.
You want to hit the heavy bag with me?
I don't feel good about myself.
We can start hitting the heavy bag a few times a week?
No.
Sure you have to throw a nice left jab? No?
Yeah, I'll throw one fucking punch. Just my left arm and my entire neck will just go up in flames.
Is that better? Speaking of the next level?
I mean, I can feel shit moving around in there, like getting ready for round two, but right now I'm good, yeah.
Okay.
I'm good. Just always waiting for that other shoe to drop.
You're not under the knife yet. We're waiting for the under the knife, Ian.
New study. Pat, we got a study. G4 is returning.
We're going back to 2010 right now. A new study finds video games have no proven impact on real violence. From comicbook.com, who faced this stuff back in the 50s with the Comics Authority, who tried to censor... Well, they did censor comics after that point in time, because some asshole with
an axe... The Comics Code.
Some asshole with an axe, you know, basically killed his family or what have you, and they found all the horror comics that are popular in the 50s next to him. See, one asshole ruins it for everyone, just like those idiots that shut up the fucking high school in Colorado. Now I can't play Doom anymore. A new study has found once more that there is no proven link between video games... They came down on video games after that happened.
I mean, you can definitely play Doom on about anything right now.
Well, I mean, you have assholes that come out against video games.
Yes.
It happens all the time. A new study has found once more that there is no proven link between video games and real violence or aggressive behavior. The study was published in Royal Society Open Science. Royal Society Open Science, and was conducted by Massey University's Aaron Drummond. The study found that current research is unable to support the hypothesis that violent video games have a meaningful, long-term, predictive impact on youth aggression. So this was a meta study. It looks like they studied 28 independent samples for its conclusion. For fans of M-rated games such as Mortal Kombat 11, Doom Eternal, and Grand Theft Auto 5, the study is further evidence that allegations regarding the negative impact of violent video games remains unfounded. It's good they went for like more modern stuff versus like, oh, we're going to look back at like Duke Nukem 3D, or you know, like these are proper research. They're doing like the hot games,
the
here and now games. And we talked about this brings up the APA study from earlier this year. We spoke about that. So we're getting in line now on this. This is not that this is the science is complete on this, but the common conclusion upon health professionals, mental health professionals, is that this is not this is bullshit to say that violence comes from video games.
Yeah, it is. And we bring it up every time a new study comes out, and you know, just restating the fact that it's horse patoots.
I mean, obviously there could be correlation between people that have violent tendencies to play violent games, but that's not causation.
Yes.
If you don't know what correlation and causation is, congratulations, you're 95% of Americans who can't read a study properly, so go look it up and see what that means. Not to talk down to you, but that's how we get in trouble.
Oh, the study said that eating butter causes cancer.
No, that's not what the study said.
Yes.
Maybe if you eat 18 pounds of butter a day, those people are more likely to have a cancer in their life. Doesn't mean it caused it. That's not a real study, but maybe it is. I don't know. Maybe the Anti-Butter Association had that funded, that study.
Eggs give you big muscles.
The egg stuff is the worst. Because that was, when I was a kid, eggs will kill you. Now they're good. They'll kill you. Now we're back to good again.
You know what I'm going to do?
Yeah.
I'm just going to fucking eat eggs my whole goddamn life because I love them. Eggs are delicious.
But then you find
they're
out
wonderful.
Those studies are like, oh, it's the fucking Oats and Mills Society that put out the anti-egg data so you buy more breakfast cereal. And that's shit that actually happens with this stuff. They go back and forth.
Moms against eggs.
No.
I know.
But eggs are fine for you. You can eat them every day. You're not going to die.
They're a perfect goddamn food.
You'll be healthier eating eggs every day than fucking Cocoa Crisp as a kid. That would have been a lot better. Maybe not the breakfast sandwich I used to make for myself when I was 9, Saturday mornings on the I used to toast the Italian bread, the big loaf of Italian bread with some pork roll and egg and cheese. Oh
yeah,
man,
yeah,
that's why I was thick but quick, because my parents didn't slap that big ass sandwich out of my mouth at 10:30 in the morning on Saturday mornings before I watched Dungeons and Dragons. Sorry, what was I saying?
You were talking about G4 returning.
Anyway, yeah. So the findings are BS when it comes to this. Okay. So, G4, this is might be a longer discussion.
You got to carry it, because I've never watched one thing on G4.
Well, here's the weird thing, Ian.
Okay.
I never watched a full episode of X-Player Attack of the Show, and I know G4 used to have Cops on. They used to have, what was that sleazy one I liked? Cheaters? Where they would hide out and see, oh, it's the man with the woman, or the two women together. Whoa. And then they would come bring out the person. Oh, you're cheating on me. And you couldn't. It
Cheaters
was probably
was
staged. But, like, maybe it wasn't. Like, Jerry Springer was staged a lot of it. Maybe some of it was in truth. Anyway.
I have no problems with G4 TV, by the way. I'm not saying I'm better than G4 TV. I didn't have cable around the time G4 was a thing, so I don't think I've ever watched any of it.
So G4, back in the 2000s, and it closed down, 2014, was your cable news source for video game information and reviews and tech news and things like that, and most fondly remembered for launching the career of Olivia Munn. That's why a lot of people probably watched it back then, let's be honest. But an attractive woman that likes tech and video game stuff, oh yeah, great.
Who's
anyway,
Olivia, let me see,
you know who Olivia Munn is?
No.
Okay. Wow. Anyway, so this is all you need to know about
she's pretty.
Yes, she is. And she used to stick 15 hot dogs in her mouth at one time on the show, and that's why people watch that show. Well, anyway.
That seems ridiculous.
Yes, she over-sexualized that, and so since video game nerds were still in the realm of, oh, no women like video games, they watched that shit. Doesn't work now, but it may have worked in 2005. Okay. You know, like,
all right.
Anyway, sorry. So the teaser was put online from like a Twitter account. We never stopped playing. Well, the last tweet was like 5 years ago on this account. So Comcast, it seems, is trying to bring this back in some form. We're not sure yet where this is going to be and whether it's going to be. I don't think this is going to be a cable network, because I don't think we're at the point in time where we can go back in time and have people go onto their old-timey TVs to watch video game news and reviews that's already old, because that's available instantly now on Twitch and on YouTube and on Twitter.
Yeah, if anything, I feel like this would be like a 24-hour Twitch channel or something like that.
That might work, but that ain't going to make the money. This could be something that people were saying maybe it'll be on the Peacock streaming NBC service, which sounds like a good idea, but that's an awful name for it. This there's a reason why this stuff ended. Frank used to watch these shows. That's why when I used to bring up what Frank would know about Assassin's Creed, remember I used to tell, like, Frank knows about Assassin's Creed like 10 years ago, 9 years ago. He used to tune in. Probably Olivia Munn was part of it. But he was fascinated by the tech stuff, I guess, and the video game stuff, just seeing it. He doesn't want to play it, but he watched it. But there's a reason why G4 died off and GameTrailers.com died off, is because you reached a point in time where
everyone just said, well, we'll just put our own trailers and stuff up on our own YouTube channel. They discovered, these companies discovered YouTube.
Right.
Like Ubisoft discovered YouTube. Rockstar Games said 8 years ago, we'll just start putting stuff on YouTube. We don't need a middleman anymore.
Well, and you've got YouTube, you know, and then you've got social networks like Facebook and Twitter that disseminate that information. Yeah. And people follow who they want to follow on these platforms, and basically they've created their own content feed, and they know where to get it. You don't need a centralized channel to do it anymore.
No, and that's why some of the, obviously, in the past 10 years, I mean, God, half of the gaming news websites are gone the past 10 years, or most of them, more than half probably, the main ones. So we're stuck with like three or four. So... yeah, I mean, people are getting nostalgic. Because, oh my God, G4's coming back. How many of you are actually going to watch it that are excited for it to come back? That's what I'm going to say. It's been 6 years since anyone watched it, and even then, no one watched it in 2014.
You know what channel I want to come back so bad? Nickelodeon Gas. Gas stood for Games and Sports. It was a... I don't know how long it lasted.
That was after my time.
It was in my first apartment, and I was just a very high stoner. And all it was old episodes of Double Dare and...
that's their sports?
Yeah, it was like Double Dare and Legends of the Hidden Temple and Guts? Nickelodeon Guts, and it was all of those game shows
you have
24 hours a day.
Well, they had tons of Double Dare. I mean, they had Family Double Dare and Double Dare for years.
And I watched that shit like crazy. That was like my favorite cable station.
Go watch the Gorilla Monsoon Bobby the Brain Double Dare episode where they team up against each other. It's delightful.
I don't think I've ever seen that.
It's all on you. It's delightful to see Bobby run through the obstacle course at the end. It's like, sorry.
All right.
I'll start crying when I think about those two. Sorry. They're so pure. They're not, but because the wrestling business is carny trash, but, you know.
Yeah, there's nothing pure about
them. They're pure. Pure as personalities and as friends.
Sure.
Sorry. I'm going to start crying here. Anyway, back to G4. So we don't know what's going to happen with this yet. They timed this kind of with, like, the Comic-Con timing with this in terms of, all right, G4 is coming back, blah, blah, blah. Did you watch any of the Comic-Con virtual panels?
No.
I didn't either.
I kind of felt insulted that people were trying to pretend like Comic-Con was still going on.
They try to do like the virtual vendor thing, but it's not the same. I mean, hopefully next year it comes back. I can't bring myself to try to pretend that it's a thing.
It was nice. I mean, honestly, it was as much as I missed it, and I did. I mean, in the lead up to what would have been Comic-Con, you know, my phone is sending me pictures from last year in terms of memories, and Vonnie and I are talking about it. And obviously, you realize something's missing when you've been going to Comic-Con for over a decade.
Yeah, this would have been my 11th or 12th one.
And yeah, it's a big commercial shit show, but I do love it. You know, I went through, I think, the usual Comic-Con arc that most people have. They absolutely love it the first few years they go, and then they start to wear out, and they're like, maybe it's not so much for me. And then they take a year where they don't go as much, and they're like, you know what, I missed it. And then,
so this will be our gap year.
But then, like, the past 2 years, I've really, really enjoyed going to Comic-Con again. I figured out exactly how much time I can spend down there and how I want to spend it, and I, you know, meeting up with friends. And yeah, I missed it, but I couldn't pretend and like tune into stuff. I don't do panels and stuff anyways at Comic-Con, so
you did the one. I roped you in.
Yes, but I mean, in general, I don't go to panels and things like that at Comic-Con. So
I haven't been to a panel at Comic-Con in probably 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's literally about walking the floor and hanging out with friends. So there was nothing a virtual Comic-Con was going to give me.
Because almost nothing's exclusive at these panels anymore, especially on the movie, like the superhero stuff. They release that because they know it's going to get leaked, so they just release it. Like, what's the point? And that went back to Batman v Superman. After that point, they started just coming out with that stuff like 5 years ago, which is great because I ain't standing in line anymore at Hall H. I mean, that's what I put out the video 10 years ago, the first Comic-Con me and James went out. We did a video on Comic-Con when the person got stabbed in the eye in between the Harry Potter and the Captain America Marvel one. And so, like, there was a big, big mess and delay. We couldn't get it. We were online for like 4 hours trying to get into Hall H. And it wasn't. Clear the rooms, Comic-Con. Clear Hall H out after. You get one panel, Hall H. You get one. Set up different lines for each one. Clear the fucking rooms out. It's not fair. Some asshole takes a seat the whole day for one panel. Who does that anyway? I don't know. I'm not into that culture. Oh, let's
going Hall H for our whole fucking weekend. Oh, really? That's why you're spending money on this trip? Sorry. But I had fun last year. Buying trash comics with Frank Cifaldi was fun. Was that last year or 2 years ago? That was last year. Was it last year?
That was last year.
Wow. Did a lot last year. Hung out with Andre and Dan looking for toys every year is like a highlight. I always find a couple little video game stuff. I always get in arguments with the new comic collectors. I got into graded video games. That's always fun. And then what else did I do last year? Oh, I ended up on Justin Roiland's yacht party of Rick and Morty fame with James. And that was a very, very interesting experience. So that's always why I like Comic-Con. There's always something weird that happens on the side. And sometimes with me and James, we end up at a weird party. It's like the third time it's happened. There, I just latch on as a plus one to James for these parties, basically. But it's fun. We always look at it like, what the fuck's going on? I think I told you about the Robert Rodriguez model mm-hmm. party like 9 years ago that mm-hmm. we went to. That was a bizarre experience. James interviewed Robert Rodriguez. And that project never came out. That Fire and Ice animated. It never came out, I don't believe. And then we ended up at this party where there was a bunch of paid models there. But they were nice, and we're talking to them, and it was just so bizarre because it was like a staged Comic-Con. It was at the Hard Rock. It was a staged Comic-Con red carpet party for an upcoming project, which never happened, by the way. And like inside, there wasn't any real celebrities. Robert Rodriguez was walking around. Tall guy. He's like 6'3". And then there was maybe a couple other people and a bunch of models there that they probably paid. And we talked to them and whatever. There was free food and stuff. Me and James were there till like 1 in the morning that year. And it was just a weird experience. There's always weird experiences. The first Back to the Future girlfriend sat on my lap in the DeLorean. I didn't ask her to. That was back in 2011. That's not on YouTube. I should put that on YouTube. The first Jennifer. She was very lovely. Did an interview with her. Anyway. So say goodbye to Comic-Con this year. And to all, we might as well say this. All conventions are canceled for video games this year, officially. The last ones have been canceled, which is a proper move, obviously. Retropalooza was just canceled. And then a week before this, Too Many Games was canceled. I think that's it. They're all canceled. They're all done this year. So hopefully next year they come back. Hopefully we're back.
Hey, fingers crossed. I've already seen stuff getting canceled in 2021. I've already seen like...
Well, if we were in Europe, we would have been fine because they have everything on lock there. So it would have been fine. But here we don't know how to act. So that's just unfortunate.
Lastly, enjoy the baseball while you can because baseball's going fucking swimmingly right now.
Yeah. The video came out where we brought up baseball the same day that like 7 to 10 Marlins players and coaches had COVID. I didn't realize that like... There's no procedures that they came across with baseball. It's like, oh, honor system. We'll just hope you guys do the right thing. And that's just a recipe for disaster because they're traveling around. They're not bubbled up like the NBA. And I think hockey is semi-bubbled. I don't know what's going on with hockey yet. But it seems like hockey and NBA are doing it right. And baseball is just like, oh, we're hoping it's not going to affect you. So enjoy the weird 60-game season while it lasts. Enjoy Jacob deGrom. Not giving up any runs, and the Mets not giving him any run support like usual. There, so all right, that's it for our roundup on the intro here.
That's it.
Remember, everyone on YouTube that you're watching, remember we got an audio podcast you can subscribe to on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play Store, wherever fine podcasts are given for free, Spotify. All right. Ian, what's going on with this announcement from Analog for the Pocket?
Well, Analog Pocket announced that they were going to have an announcement of an announcement on Monday.
Well, it wasn't three-tiered. It was an announcement of an announcement.
They announced that there was going to be an announcement on Monday. And on Monday,
That was an announcement. That was a tweet. I don't count that as an announcement.
And then on Monday, they announced that next week you'll be able to pre-order. I personally don't care. Some people were a little upset about it. I think if they had not said that, if they had just said... 8 a.m. the 27th, and they had put them up for sale, okay. And everyone missed them, they would have been upset about it.
Okay, let's explain what the Analog Pocket is.
I'm getting there, Patrick.
Okay.
So, we already have talked about the Pocket. The Analog Pocket, running over the basics that we've been over before, it is a handheld system that runs on FPGA, and will play out of the box. It will run Game Boy, Game Boy Color, and Game Boy Advance games. At pre-order time, once pre-orders launch next week, there will be a Game Gear attachment available. There are Neo Geo Pocket and Atari Lynx adapters in the works. In the works, but they are not being put up for pre-order on the 3rd.
Oh, the Game Gear one is on the website.
That's what I said. The Game Gear one is. The other two are not. The system itself, like most previous analog systems, you know, is aiming for basically the best fidelity and picture you can get out of these systems. And it's a fairly slick-looking piece of hardware. When it was announced initially, the start, select, and home buttons were way up higher on the system, which looked like it could be crowding and not particularly great. They did... The first thing they announced was two design changes. They moved those buttons down. And the analog dock, which is an accessory that you can purchase for this system that will allow you to hook it up to your TV, has a recess in it now where the system will fit a bit more snugly. When they first showed that dock, it was a flat surface and you docked it. And as a person who works in game retail and has to do repairs on all sorts of things, that looked like a perfect opportunity to crack and destroy ports because there would have been no support.
Sure. So they said, okay, well, let's think about this more and let's tighten up the design, which is why you have this long period. Plus with COVID, obviously, That probably didn't help as well, potentially, for production.
So, back when they announced it, they also said that it would be used for music making. It is going to... I think all of the analog systems so far... Well, at least the Mega SG and the Super NT had games built into them. There is no necessarily... so far, it doesn't look like there's a game built into this, but it is giving you access to Nanoloop, which is a popular Game Boy music production software. I'm more familiar with LSDJ, but Nanoloop is great. I've used Nanoloop. I love it. So that's very cool that they're going to... that they're, you know, kind of trying to market this to the chiptune scene as well.
You think it'll do well just by default because, hey, we have sound libraries built into this?
I think it's not going to hurt it.
Sure. Wonderful Kevtris is a big fan of chiptune stuff.
Yes.
So he's probably like, yeah, we'll put this in here because he's done his own chiptune stuff in the past. So
one of the things that was mentioned that I thought was actually very, very cool is they're not taking the Nanoloop thing lightly. It's not just something that they're throwing in there. They are also releasing a slew of MIDI connective cables so that you can hook this up and get it talking with other software. This is very exciting to me. In the pictures alone, it shows it, you know, hooking up with a Teenage Engineering OP1, which I have. It shows it hooked up to some of the Pocket operators. And it has, you know, they're going to be putting out a pocket to MIDI USB-A cable, an actual MIDI cable, pocket to analog sync cable.
Someone who's not familiar with MIDI, you want to explain real quick?
Yeah, basically it allows it to talk, so it can send instructions to other instruments or other instruments can send instructions to it.
Back and forth for playing different sounds from one of the other, you program like the song on one, you can put the output of a sound to like the sound on a keyboard, things like that. It's like your workshop, basically. It's part of your workshop.
It's very cool. It basically becomes part of your flow. You can actually work it into your hardware sound setup. A couple other things that were mentioned. The original display mode stuff is very cool. So the Pocket has a 615 PPI display. It's an insanely high fidelity display,
Three and a half inch.
Three and a half inch. It's 10 times the... 10 times the resolution of the original Game Boy screen. What's cool, though, is that they have, because you're working with a screen like that, they can mimic the screens of all the systems that you're playing. So you can make it look like a Game Boy screen, and it will replicate all of the weird little quirks. You'll be able to see all the little pixels, you know,
the
lines and stuff.
That's beautiful.
So that's actually very neat, and I'm interested in, they said they've even got kind of figured out how to replicate the backlight of, you know, certain systems. It'll be very interesting to me to see how that plays out,
because some games built in the effects of having the backlight. So, so obviously a ton of thought went into this. Why wouldn't it? All the analog products, they put the thought and time into this. Here, display is made from Gorilla Glass, so it's really strong. There's never been a display this advanced in a video game system. I'll take their word for it, because so far analog's delivered on everything they've promised, for the most part. Yeah, resolution is 1600 times 1440 resolution. One thing I'll mention, there's an extra FPGA included.
Yes, extra FPGA included, and they are actively looking for people to develop on it. They
Turbo Express.
Yeah, that's going to happen. It says right on the website, Pocket is designed for FPGA development. We added a second dedicated FPGA just for developers to develop and port their own cores. You'll get access to Analog's proprietary hardware and scalers. So they're giving
putting it
you
out there.
They're giving you the pat on the ass.
Come on.
And then I think one of the cooler things that was mentioned is that they are partnering with GB Studio, which is a drag and drop Game Boy creation studio. And you can you'll be able to create proprietary Pocket file formats and create your own games, drop them, and share them on this system.
I'd be really interested in seeing what, obviously, when it comes out, what the limitations of this stuff, what can you actually do with this, you know, like how customizable these games are. I'm really interested to see, like, what that's like. I mean, I don't...
Drag and drop should not scare people. Obviously, you know, I have a feeling that GB Studio, just looking at it, is one of those things where if you wanted to do drag and drop, you could, but it also looks like you can get under the hood and do some actual programming in there, too. So you can probably do whatever your skill will allow you to do.
Yeah, I'm not too familiar with GB Studio. I'll look it up now.
So that's very cool. When you take a step back, and I don't want to sound like I'm blowing the unit, but I am very excited for this. It really is it's not just a Game Boy player, it's also it's a creation suite. You've got music creation, yeah. You've got game creation, you've got FPGA development, and with FPGA development, who knows what else you might end up be playing on this, you know, within the realm of legality. But there's lots of things that will be doable for this. So, fingers crossed, I will certainly be... This is one of those things where I'm not getting paid to say it. I am going to be trying to get one of these next Monday.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I can't picture these being limited. These would probably be open pre-order.
Well, this is another thing that I think with the delay in announcing, you know, pre-orders, possibly COVID is part of it. But there was a very, very strong reaction to this when it came out, and I'm not sure they were expecting people to be this excited about
just
it.
Just the tweet of the announcement of this got a huge reaction.
Yeah. I can only hope, fingers crossed, that this is not a super limited thing and that they will look at the pre-orders and develop to pre-order or produce to
yes,
pre-order
produce
amount.
Around that. I think that would be
fingers crossed.
I think that would be kosher in this case, because obviously the last two were not limited, the Super NT and the Mega SG.
You can still buy the Mega SG, but the Super NT is gone, and then the original NT
Noir is not out yet, right?
The what?
The updated NT Noir is not out yet.
It's sold out.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it's sold out. It's gone.
Oh, so you could buy it,
but it was gone.
Oh.
Yeah, that sold out.
I don't know why I didn't buy the mini one still. I should have bought the original mini NT.
So, but that has, you know, to kind of bring up another company, it does kind of create some bad blood, this weird Mondo, you know, style, you know, these things are hyper limited. I think they realized that, you know, Limited Run went through a problem like this when they did their... you know, when they first started with the Vita games and the PS4 games, sure. It was, you had to be there at 9 a.m. and, you know, hope you got it. When they went to the Switch games, they did the smart thing. They manufactured to pre-order. I think Analog probably realizes that there is no negative to having these things in people's hands. And hopefully now that after so many units, they realize that there is a market for this and it's going to sell, and hopefully they will create as... I understand when you're first starting out, you create a small amount of something because you're not sure how well it's going to sell. Now they know how well this is going to sell.
This is why this is an interesting product here, because there was always other ways to play with Hyperkin and the Retrons. There was always a way to play the console games. There wasn't a fantastic way to play these handhelds with the original game. and to carry it around. You can buy little crappy little, you know, ROM players, but who the hell wants that? Some people want the real thing. So they come out with this, and when you look at this, this is an awesome hybrid between a Game Boy Pocket and the SP, and how it's designed. It's like it's a brilliant cross design of both in terms of the square layout, the four buttons, the left and right triggers, but it has the screen like a fixed screen like a Game Boy Pocket.
Yeah, my only concern is how comfortable those triggers will be to use if there's when there's a cartridge in there. I was actually looking at the back of the system earlier, and it does look like there's a slight recess for the cartridge to go into, but I'm just wondering if my fingertips are going to be butting up against the side of the cartridge as I'm trying to press those trigger buttons.
I don't see why that would. If it was fine on the SP, they probably went along the same lines of that, right? But I see what you're saying. But no, I absolutely...
The SP cartridge went on the bottom. There was no cartridge anywhere at the top. If you look at the back of the system, you'll see what I'm saying. I feel like there's a potential here for it to get cramped. Look at the back of the system. Look at where the cartridge goes in.
I need a picture. Oh, there it is.
And then you... So it looks like the cartridge will be set far enough back that your fingers aren't constantly bumping
into. There's a little recess thing.
Yes.
Here.
So
I think they thought of that. There's a little
Yeah, I didn't really notice the recess until today.
Yeah, I think... Oh, concave and convex buttons.
I knew you were going to bring that up.
Thank you. Why is this not a thing anymore? It's the easiest thing to do in any controller. Thank you. The sense of feel is very important. It's my strongest sense. Sorry. That's very important there. So, yeah. So, you basically get six usable buttons. The D-pad is probably nice. Can't picture it not being nice. And they put the start and home buttons, whatever, on the way bottom so your grubby fingers don't hit it by accident. They took care of all the design elements that were potentially troublesome there.
So, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much all I've got to say on it.
Price is $200. We didn't mention that. I think that's about where I thought it was going to be, being that they're...
I thought that's what they mentioned last year.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, $200, and the dock is going to be $100.
Because their consoles are $180 for the Mega SG, and there's a lot going into this, obviously. A lot of tech going into this, and even with stuff like the screen and everything. I'm not... probably interested in the dock to play it on a TV as much as you are.
I'm definitely into that.
I know the docks can be expensive with everything in there. I think some people would get sticker shock. I got slight sticker shock at $100 on that. But like I said, I'm not the main audience for that. I'd rather just get the console for the most part. But maybe the dock would be fun as a way. I don't know. The cables are, what are they, $15 each for the multiplayer cables. If you have only to buy one and your friend buys one, that's not that bad.
$15 bucks is the standard price for a Link cable.
I mean, yeah, it's not bad. I think if they were, I'm just doing marketing, Pat, if they were like $10, I think you move a ton of them more. But $15 bucks, it's, I mean, I'm not sure how much use you're going to get out of them anyway over time with you know.
I'm one of those people that actually still plays my Game Boy and knows people who still play Game Boy.
So you're all in on that.
That's how Yokoi Kids came about. No, what I'm getting at is I will probably order the cable, but the amount of times I've linked up and played multiplayer Game Boy games, and I'm a big Game Boy fan, is like I can count them on one hand.
Well, the original Game Boy, they pushed that with the F1 race, and I don't remember like my friends or cousins who had that ever really doing multiplayer.
However,
Game Boy,
you can put this on the dock and wirelessly attach up to four controllers and play that way.
Okay. That's why the dock's a lot more money, because you're doing a lot more stuff like that. That's interesting.
So,
and remember, this is like 2,800 games between all three systems out of the box.
And then that's not even including the MGP, the Lynx, and the Game Gear stuff.
I will buy the Lynx adapter. Like the Lynx, I love the Lynx. The actual tech on the Link stinks. Like the actual like the button layouts and where the D-pad is, it's not the best. I'm excited for this. Black or white for you, Ian?
Tough call. Real fucking tough call. Haven't decided yet. I think the white looks awesome, but here's where my concern.
Get dirt on it from your fingers?
Dirt from fingers, but having, like, I loved the original white DSs. What happens is, see how the there's that glass, you know, that thick glass over the
Gorilla Glass
screen. I could see little bits of dirt and dust leaching into that, and
really?
Those crevices are hard to clean. I see it on DSs all the time. Like, things that are, like, perfectly white, there's always a way for dirt to get in there. So, I don't know.
Maybe they took care of it. Maybe it's, like, vacuum sealed. You know, it's...
We'll see. I would...
Well, that doesn't happen on iPhones, does it?
A little
bit. I never had a white iPhone. I don't own one.
No, actually, it doesn't. It's fine.
We figure that out, Ian. Yeah. This isn't 2003.
It's fine. I'll flip a fucking coin.
I think this is going to hit a lot of different markets. This is going to hit people like me who's like, wow, this is the first product of its kind to me. It's going to hit the people that are into the music. I'm not as many of those as the game players, obviously. But it's also going to hit even people that be like, you know what? I still love Game Boys. I still play in my, you know, now 15-year-old SP. I want an update.
Yeah.
Update. I want a different solution. And plus, SPs are spendy to find, especially a backlit SP are spendy find them.
Especially right now during COVID.
Yeah.
A 101 Game Boy, a 101 model Game Boy Advance SP is going to easily run you $100.
Wow, they're up to 100? This be like 60?
It's going to easily run you $100 right now.
110, buy it now. You're right. 110 for... And they're in crappy condition. They're beat up. The LCD screen's not going to be as good. The buttons are mushier on those.
Right. When you start looking at the fact that the old hardware is going to be expensive and yes. not as nice, the $200
it's
on this
bad.
Does not seem as bad.
It's not bad. I mean, I own a few, obviously, SPs from this. I used to buy the 101s. Whatever I saw with the swap, I'd buy the 101s there. But no, I'm down. I'm definitely down. We'll play some Faceball 2000. We have to.
Yeah.
Have a nice day. That's Super Nintendo 1. All right. Did we hit all the main points on this?
We did. I made sure of it.
You made sure of it. Oh, real quick. I looked up the GB Studio 2 beta trailer. It looks like there's built in, you can do a shooter, do like a Pokemon looking, overhead looking RPG sort of style, a platformer. So it looks like probably out of the box, you can pick probably your game type and get going from there. It's probably how the Maker Studio works there. I just wasn't aware of GB Studio before, but it's great to partner with them because then everyone wins and you can make your own games. So, all right, was it August 3rd? It goes on sale for pre-order and it comes
8 a.m.
out. It comes out, I guess Q1 next year.
May.
It's May.
Yep. It's a long wait, but whatever.
Well,
we're in strange times.
I'll be turning 40 again. Wink. This year doesn't count. This is a do-over year.
You'll be turning 40 again. Okay.
I didn't have a party. Did nothing. I sat around by myself. And it's summer.
Sure.
You want to keep things clean and tight with the Lawnmower 3.0 from Manscaped.
Feel a little breezy.
Feel a little breezy?
Feel a little breezy.
Get that undercarriage clean. 3.0 lawnmower. It's got the LED light. It's got the quiet stroke technology to go alongside it. It's waterproof. You can use it in the shower. You can use it wherever you want.
Manscaped engineering team has spent 18 months perfecting the greatest ball hair trimmer ever created and just released the new and improved Lawnmower 3.0. It's the third generation trimmer featuring a cutting edge ceramic blade to reduce manscaping accidents. You definitely don't want to nick yourself when you're cleaning up down there.
No.
Millions of balls are about to be nick free thanks to Manscaped's advanced skin safe technology. It's water resistant. You can do it in the
yes.
shower. One of the coolest features is an LED light which keeps things illuminated. You know where
hey.
You're going.
Hey, you don't know if the lights go out sometimes, you gotta get trimmed down there. Well, now you're covered with the LED light.
Get 20% off and free shipping with the code CUPODCAST at manscaped.com. That's 20% off, free shipping, CUPODCAST at manscaped.com.
Your balls will thank you. All right. Ian, we have some Nintendo leakage that's been happening. We spoke about this, I think, a few months ago, the first batch of
we've been bringing this up for a while. It's like, so, big breach. big Nintendo breach in, I think, 2018.
Oh, Billy.
My best guess, I think, and it's a lot of people, is that basically a lot of data was taken, dispersed around the internet, perhaps for caretaking, and it's being leaked out.
Well, this was back to the May data breach, though, that was reported.
Right, which I think goes back
to
the 2018 okay. data breach. I think it's all coming from the same place, but I could be wrong. A lot of things coming out of it. that are, some are more interesting, some are less interesting. But it's been all over Twitter and I'm sure other websites for days. Some of the big things that came out of it, the Star Fox 2 and original Star Fox, source code, which from what I understand, people had, even the people who worked on it, like Dylan Cuthbert, thought that it had been lost forever.
Wow.
Just gone. People had talked about, and I think it was confirmed even a while back, that Luigi was initially considered for Super Mario 64. However, they actually went in and found the leak. They found his character model assets. Yoshi's Island, this is, I'm just reading directly this from Kotaku. Yoshi's Island, that was the first one that I saw when it came out this week. Yoshi's Island suffered one of the bigger leaks of the lot, with source data, character assets, and prototype designs leaking alongside an earlier version of the game starring a mystery protagonist. Yoshi looked a lot different. He looked way more like a dinosaur.
Oh, I like that.
Yep.
It's got a longer snout.
Yep. He looked way more like a dinosaur. He's actually pretty dang cute.
With a beak.
Yeah, pretty darn cute there. But yeah, a more longer beak, longer body, more realistic dinosaur-like appearance. Yoshi eventually is looking, the game would be far more cutesy and feature around her nose, egg-like appearance. And then there was some other alternate model stuff that I don't understand. So yeah, that's the stuff that I was aware of. A leaked copy of Star Fox 2 at one point in time shows human characters.
Before we get to that, it looks like the Yoshi Island looked like there was another character that might have been the original protagonist before they changed it.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Ocarina of Time's 64DD expansion may have been found. Pilot Wing's original prototype was revealed. More beta Pokemon. Yeah, it's nuts. And it's all very interesting to me, but I mean, I understand the significance of finding some of this stuff. I understand some developers feel like it's kind of like a breach of privacy, but on the other hand, I do feel like it's, you know, it's probably important to have the source code.
I was saying, is it a breach when you don't know what happened to your own source? I mean, at that point, it's either lost forever or people find it and discover it.
Sure.
I mean, to me, having the source code is that really as an important thing if we have the games? I mean, it's nice, but that's like a bonus thing. I mean, some of this stuff, like I'm seeing this, yeah, this really fascinating, seeing this earlier set of Yoshi. It's a character with with goggles and a helmet on, jumping around. It's very interesting if that was going to be a different game. So that to me is more historic to me. Okay, this could have been a game just with a random ass character.
Source code is interesting though, because it shows people how, I mean, people who can read source code and understand it, it shows how many tricks and workarounds people were using on the SNES, you know, and really shows a lot of how people got things to run on the system, which I think is important because that is stuff that is going to be lost to time if you don't have the source code.
Sure.
Understanding how they made the system tick.
Yeah, but people still make Super Nintendo games today, so it's like we know how to program. I see what you're saying. To me, that's where to me it'd be like, well, if you're looking at all my outline notes for a story I'm writing, maybe it's an embarrassing things that I tried and failed, didn't want. Like, do you have the right to see that sort of stuff? Sort of get that.
No, I kind of get it too. You know? I mean, and don't forget that source code is never just source code. It's notes and documentation and stuff like that. So you know, it's kind of like going through a diary or a journal at the time. I understand the thought that it's, you know, a bit exposing or something like that.
Yeah, finding like the history of like these earlier versions of the game, that to me is totally different.
Because
like I said, this is fascinating watching this early version of Yoshi's Island. It was known as Super Donkey. Like, that's, I never heard that was a potential thing ever before. This could have been more akin to a Donkey Kong sequel rather than becoming Yoshi's Island. Wow. Could this mystery character be Jumpman? So far, it's unclear, but as the leaks keep coming, we're sure to learn more about this build of Yoshi's Island. You talked about the leaked copy of Star Fox 2. Showed human characters. That's interesting. There's human characters in that. The DD expansion. Pilot Wing's original prototype. Wow. Dragonfly.
So,
I mean, this is getting in there. How about we talk about Hit the Ice?
Oh yeah! Also in there, discovered was a retail ready copy of Hit the Ice was discovered as an email attachment.
They were emailing the ROMs.
This is crazy because Frank Cifaldi released a translated version of an almost complete version of that, I want to say, in 2001 or 2002.
Early 2000s.
And, you know, I mean, that was probably as complete as anyone ever thought they were going to see. And then, you know, here's this data dump and boom, there you have it, an actual finished version of it. Hit the Ice was a hockey arcade game that was, you know, popular in the early 90s. This was to be the NES port of it, but it actually turns it more into adds a lot of RPG elements to
it. It's like the Turbo version. They add the RPG stuff onto it. The gameplay itself, it's 2-on-2 hockey. It's sort of like NBA Jam-ish. I mean, this is before NBA Jam in terms of year. This was the early 90s. You have a goalie. You have super attacks and things like that. And then, yeah. I still wonder on this day why they didn't come out with it on the NES. I think it would have done well. I would have probably been super interested in it.
Yeah, I could see that as being a title that would have done well. Who knows? I mean, especially if it was that complete, maybe they just thought it was too late in the system's lifespan and never did it.
Or just the fact that it was already on Super Nintendo, they're like, what's the point? We're moving on from
Yeah, the Super Nintendo version doesn't have all that RPG stuff on it, though, I don't believe. I think it's just a port of the arcade game.
Correct. I think you're right. I should look at the book and see who reviewed it. But yeah, let's see. Now I'm really interested in seeing... Okay, so it came out on Genesis in 92 and Super Nintendo in 93. Yeah, so they were done with the NES by 93. So the last games were coming out. So they're probably just like, no, it's too late. Maybe if it was like 91 or 92, they might have done it, but not by 93. They were finished with it. The Turbo one came out in 92 there. So, all right. All right, well, that's interesting. And there's going to be more. I think we didn't even touch on everything.
The Turbo one had RPG elements? Because I've played the Turbo one, and I don't recall that.
I'm confusing the different ones. Did it not have it? The Turbo?
I just remember...
Grab it behind you. It's somewhere.
I remember playing it.
I have it in the box, I think.
I had it. I played it. I did not like it, and I got rid of it.
In the middle of the second column. Yellow box. No, Ian, down boxes, right? Yellow. Yellow. Right there. Hit the ice. Look in the back of the box. Does it mention it?
No.
Oh!
Nope. Yeah, I don't think any of them had. I think that was the only one that was going to have it. Because I had this for Turbo for a while and got rid of it because I was like, this sucks.
Damn it. You let me down, Turbo Graphics.
It was slow and not fun.
So the NES one had the RPG stuff. Genesis probably didn't. It was probably the same as the Super
one. I don't think any of them did.
Wow. So you got to get that NES experience. Oh, because the graphics stink on the NES one, so they have to add more to it.
Sure.
You know, they're not going to get the same action. First time we had a consulted TurboGrafx shelf, I think, on the show ever. I was going to say, I think I have it in the box because the back of the CD cases stink for the Hue cards. There's no information on them. Another reason why the TurboGrafx marketing team should be lined up and shot for those mistakes. But anyway, but the boxes have the information on there. Okay. All right. Anything else to add? We're probably talking about this in the next year. Oh, we didn't talk about the Pokemon beta sprite designs, things like that. I mean, this is nuts. I wish this went back to the late 80s with the email. I guess early 90s, you started to use email more in a lot of offices.
Right.
If it was late 80s, all the gems we could have learned about with, Super Nintendo news and things like that. Finally, what happened? I want to see the Bandai emails about Steam events from 87. It's like, no, we're not producing more than 1,000 of this crappy game. It's not going to sell. Or we're planning to buy this accessory. Like, that would be... those probably exist in memos in someone's drawer somewhere, but not on email. You think there's emails about the PlayStation prototype that would be released?
Possibly. Ooh. That would be interesting to see.
Cursing out Sony or something from the mid-90s? That would be interesting. Okay, well, all right. I'm liking this, Ian. I'm liking it. All right, Ian...
Yes.
Joe Rogan in the news. He's been in the news like once a week the past couple months for stuff he says on his podcast.
God, he's a f***ing idiot.
He's starting out strong. I was trying not to be so polarizing about Joe Rogan himself versus what he said on the podcast.
He's just the perfect example of a meathead who thinks he's far smarter than he actually is.
All right. I don't want to make this a referendum on Joe Rogan. This is what I say about Joe Rogan. I think for most of the time he's well-meaning, but he doesn't push back on guests that are bad actors. That's the problem. He takes the guests at their face value when he shouldn't a lot of times. And that's where I think
he engages with shitty people on a in good faith.
Yes, I have no fucking time for that.
He's
one of the people that takes everyone at good faith value when he shouldn't. There's people I know that are like that give everyone the benefit of the doubt by default when you shouldn't. I mean, Frank's like that. Frank will you have to force Frank to look for the bad in someone. He'll say, "Oh, they didn't mean that," or Frank, they were an asshole. Like, there are people like that. It's part of the personality. But when you have a podcast or giving someone a platform like Alex Jones, you know, that's a bigger issue when it comes to that, not pushing back and calling out bullshit. But he did call out bullshit recently, him and his partner on Ben Shapiro when he was on, about Colin Kaepernick. So he did point out, he said, "Oh, pull up the video," and he pointed out. So I don't know, maybe he's changing. Anyway, so video games were brought up. I don't know how, but Joe Rogan said video games is a waste of time. He said they're fun to play video games, but you don't get anywhere. Paraphrasing, you play them for a few years, you're at where you started. He compared it with being a jiu-jitsu practitioner, which he is. If you do jiu-jitsu, he jumped to a weird point where you can start your own business. If you do jiu-jitsu, maybe that's why you do jiu-jitsu, and then a few years later you can do that, you have advanced, which is weird. I would just say, well, jiu-jitsu is a martial art and self-defense, and it's a healthy activity to do. I wouldn't have gone to a business aspect. So people, you know, left and right were coming at Joe Rogan different. It was really weird to make it political, because people are going to bat for him politically one way versus the other. But it's something that I've sort of touched on before about video games, where it can consume you. But to make a blanket statement that video games are a real problem, I think that's a bridge too far in it, because anything can be a problem.
Anything can be a problem. And also, video games, we're sitting here making money doing this because video games. People do YouTube channels making money because of video games. It's a flatly idiotic fucking statement.
Well, I think, though, that's the wrong tone to set, is that just because you make money of it, it's not a waste of time. Something can be leisurely activity is not a waste of time. I think that's
you're right, you don't have to have that money, but just to immediately refute where he's trying to come from.
Oh yeah,
about bullshit.
Jiu-jitsu practitioner opening your own, how many jiu-jitsu practitioners are opening their own school? That's like probably less than 1% are doing that. That's not a proper, that's the same thing as saying, well, if you play Fortnite you can become a professional. That's such a small amount. That was a weird argument line to go down.
To me, leisure activity obviously has value. I'm not even trying to argue that. I mean, that's just another thing that should be obvious, I think, to people. But just arguing on his own terms, there are tons of ways that you can fucking take video game playing and turn it into something more than just a leisure activity.
But he did touch upon something that I have brought up about when you base your whole life around one video game, what happens when that game goes away.
That's a fair point. We've said that all the time on here.
That's fair.
What's going to happen when Fortnite is no longer matters?
Yeah. Are you going to be as good as the next game? Is the audience going to disappear entirely and move on to something else? When you make your whole career about that, obviously, if you're like Ninja, it doesn't matter. You're so huge, you can play some other game, you'll follow around. But if you're like that weird middle class streamer, if we were to say that, but I mean, I know a couple where your livelihood depends upon people's interest in that particular game, because they're really following half you and half the game.
Right.
That's what it is. So he said, you have to be adaptable. You have to be able to play multiple video games, because the one video game you're really good at, what are the odds it'll be around 5 years from now? We think Fortnite's been around for a huge amount of time. It hasn't been.
No, Fortnite...
We're coming on 3 years, I think.
Yeah, I think it'll be 3 years in October.
Something like that. So we're getting to like probably like the half-life of that. Can it be around 10 years from now? Possibly in some form. Possibly they come out with Fortnite 2.0 or what have you, and then they do it. But people move on from video game interests. When you're a 13-year-old, you're going to like the same thing when you're in college? Probably not. I didn't. Did you? Were you liking the same exact stuff?
No. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that I do like, but there's lots of interests that I've moved on from, too.
Uh-oh. Ninja chimed in, saying, Joe really doesn't really understand the full context of what the gaming community is and how many different avenues you can be successful in gaming. All right, Ninja. There are very few avenues that you can be financially successful in video games. It really is a pyramid sort of system when it comes to this. It's not... there's very few people that are making a living directly off video games. You can't push that, Ninja, because you're the one... You're the 0.1% making millions of dollars doing it. That's not how it works. I mean, that perpetuates the dream of making money on being a Twitch streamer or on a YouTube or a content creator. It's not a lot of people overall. when it comes down to it. There's a lot more losers than winners when it comes to the time sink. If you're playing the games to have fun, to stress relief, that's fine. If you're looking to pursue a career, then I'm more on Joe Rogan's side than Ninja's when it comes to this. Wow, Rogan versus Ninja are our two buddies.
Oh, my brain immediately just fucking turned to mush and when Ninja... I stopped paying attention. Rogan was bad enough, but once he brought up Ninja, I was like, I'm fucking out of this conversation. I don't care.
But you see what I mean, though?
I guess.
You can't... It's like saying, okay, everyone played Little League, right? Everyone played wiffle ball and baseball as a leisurely hobby. What percentage of those end up professionally playing baseball? If you really want, it's probably one out of 5 to 10,000.
Sure.
If I'm being, maybe one out of 5,000, like several thousand. Like, it's not easy to do for any professional sport. Basketball is probably even harder because there's less there's only ever, like, 200 NBA players or what have you, or 300 versus several hundred players in Major League Baseball. So,
excuse me, yawning.
So yeah, so I think Rogan was ham-fisted in his approach to this, which, his hammer fist, oh, whatever. That's a bad MMA joke. Anyway, so
Jesus H.
So the Independent has approached, this is an Independent article, has approached Rogan's representatives for comment. He's not going to comment. He doesn't comment on Twitter when it comes to this. So let's see. YouTube creator Dr. Lupo commented, listening to this podcast is a waste of time. Generalized bad take is bad. Anything can be harmful in excess. Video games have made many people successful. They're the cause for a majority of my friendship, etc. Again, how are you defining many? When it's by percentage, it's not many. I stop bringing up success. Stop. Define what success is. Define what many is. This is a weird sort of video game culture war sort of thing that I'm trying to be reasonable about here when it comes to it. Play video games because they're fun. Don't expect you're going to make a career off of it. I think that's the best approach you can take in this situation, especially with so many people trying to make it a success. Can you make it a success out there? Yes, you can. Don't expect it to be a success. The same way I can't expect, growing up playing Little League to end up playing for the Mets. Probably ain't going to happen as much as I really, really want it to happen. It's not always mind over matter. Matter matters when it comes to this stuff. We can't draw it on a whiteboard every day and make it a reality necessarily. Sure. Not going to happen. There's no secret, Ian, to making it happen there. Anything else?
No.
Okay. All right. Ian, we got to talk about the latest Heritage Auction results, the roundup, for a couple of reasons. It's not the main one. It was a smaller one. Because I actually bid on four items on this, which I want to talk about, my experience on the live proxy. It was a robot proxy. It wasn't the guy with the gavel. It wasn't the main one. So it's like $5, $10. Final warning. Like, it's a robotic automated voice, which is a cool system. You basically click to live bid, or you put in your regular standard bid or proxy bid. So they just did their little weekend auction. Ian, did I close the window by accident? You're going to walk me through logging in again. I want to bring this up for two reasons. One, I bid on a few things. I bid on the things I thought were interesting in terms of rarity versus price. Because in the past, I've talked about things, not Star Voyager, but games that probably went for less versus how hard to find they were.
So, like, the Alien 3 here.
I bid on the Alien 3. I was the second highest bidder on the Alien 3. Alien 3 is a very uncommon, borderline rare game on the NES. You do not find it too often. You especially don't find it in the box too often at all. So, that went for...
$180
with the buyer's premium. I think I put my max at, like, $160, $150. So, it went one above me. And I knew that I was probably... That was an NES collector because it was only a 6.5 grade. So, I was like, okay. I don't like getting into bidding wars because I'm not going to...
Sure.
I don't get into psychology.
Someone obviously wants it more than you.
They'll bid it up to $400. I ain't paying $400 for a sealed aliens. But I would have spent $150 because, to me, that's probably what it'd be worth, even not graded with the grading service put in. So, I bid on that and I was the second... a highest bidder. I also put in a bid for a couple other goofy ones that I put in one for, of course, Ian Moffat Conspiracy. I put in a bid on that. I think I was second place on that, but I already own it sealed. So I was like, okay, now I'm getting silly. I just thought I could win it at like $120, but sure. It went above that. I was probably maybe third or fourth highest bidder on that, actually. I bid on Magmax for the hell of it because it's a dumb game no one ever talks about. There, I think I was like third place bidder on that. I put one in for Rocket Ranger because I loathe that game, but it's a weird game, so I put in for that. I think that was at like $100 I put in for. So and then Sesame Street Countdown is a very uncommon game, so I put in for that.
So that's the one with the really good sound chip in it too. Like with
yeah, he
all
talks.
The,
yeah, he walks around. Talking. I review that in the book. He walks around and talks and does numbers. Yeah. Oh, you remember that? So that's what I want to talk about. I put in bids on a few. I could have won a couple if I really got in a bidding war. I didn't want to there. But those are the ones that went to collectors, I think. Those are ones like, wow, Sesame Street Countdown is hard to find, even sealed. I'm going to buy it. You know?
Sure.
They did a homebrew. They did the Nomolos homebrew. That's already 8 years old, believe it or not. It's one of the earlier homebrews with the cat night. Went for $156. Nomolos, remember that? With the cat?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Storming the Catsel. I'm not sure we ever played that in a marathon. I'm not sure I have a copy of that. I don't think I do. So that was just interesting to do that. But we'll talk about some other ones. Oh, I also put a bid in on the sealed G.I. Joe 2600 game because I'm a G.I. Joe fanboy. I think I put in my max bid for $180 or $200. It went for $432, which is silly because you can buy them sealed on eBay for between $200 and $300. So I put it under the eBay cost. I was like, okay, it'd be nice to have one of those. But what else happened here? Good old Spider-Man sealed, Ian. Another 9.8 comes up. It went for $26.40. Remember, this is the one that was at $9,000 a couple months ago, less than a couple months ago. And these keep coming up every single auction. And they're coming up in the future. It's great that they're going for only $2,600. They should be going for $600 by now. If people are looking at how many of these are already out
right
there. It's nuts. These are pulled from cases at a 9.8 A++ seal. These are pulled fresh from cases to have this many of them. And you look on upcoming, if you search for Spider-Man 2600, I guarantee you there'll be at least one or two on the next auction coming up. Spider-Man, Wada Spider-Man, let's see, Bitter Buy. Yes, there's two, Ian, there's two 9.8 ones coming up for auction.
Of course.
At least one. There's one coming up in the future. That's going to go off in... No, there are two. I'm sorry. I'm an idiot twice. There are two coming up in the next week. So, you can always get a Spider-Man sealed on a 2600. It's like a fucking bases loaded cart. The equivalent for a sealed
They're
game.
Out there.
They're out there. You don't have to worry about it. They're going to keep coming up until one idiot tries to corner the market and buys 100 of them and goes bankrupt, spending $100,000, or they realize, okay, this is a bad idea. There's probably 500 of these out there. So that was an interesting one to me. But what was more interesting, Ian, was the complete in-box non-sealed stuff. Because we are crossing a really strange threshold that I was hoping we wouldn't cross, where the sealed value before was not going to affect the complete in-box stuff, and now it's starting to pull up the value of a lot of this stuff.
This Contra is just absolutely absurd.
$1,140 for not even the original release, the Rev A, the one I have sitting on my shelf over there, complete in box, non-sealed for $1,140. It's a 9.0. Yes, that's a good grade for a box. But that is fucking nuts for a dirt common game, and it's not hard to find a box copy of Contra at all.
Right.
That is just, I can't put it nicely, fucking nuts for that. Then The Legend of Zelda went for $456. 6.0 CIB. Rev A, not even want to say the early production ones. So, Zelda complete in box used to be all day, what, $60, $80? But now if you're going to go on eBay, it's going to go for hundreds of dollars because now people see this stuff happening. And it's a shame. I don't know if it's concerted effort. I never put collusion past anything at this point when it comes to this stuff. The more I learn about this stuff, I will never put collusion past buy it now prices, because all you need is a fake account to do a buy it now an item. You don't pay yourself. Who cares?
Sure.
And it still shows up as sold and completed. There's no there's no takes backs. You know, there's no do-overs on eBay, the completed listings.
Right.
But for stuff like this, there could be collusion. I don't know. But Legend of Zelda is, again, a dirt common game. It's not really hard to find in the box. So that was a weird one, Ian. Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, 7.0 CIB, went for $780. So now when you go on eBay, they're going for hundreds of dollars for just CIBs. I got it on my shelf. So should I start grading all my CIBs for some of these? I think I might have to, because this is insane money to pass up for games that are not super hard to find in the box. Like, yeah, Mike Tyson Punch Out's a little bit hard to find in the box and Legend of Zelda and Contra, but it's not like you're not going to go to a convention and not find these.
Right.
Might be hard to find a letter at this point, you know, but by the way, your Seal to Fell, you only went for $180. I thought about bidding on it for you. Well, I would have got it for $100 for you, but not for $180. Sorry.
That's fair.
9.2 Seal. So, a Seal of Tecmo Bowl went for $16.80. I thought that was weird. I know Tecmo Bowl is a heralded game amongst NES fans, but that's, you're really confusing cultural and video game history at the same time. I think that's one of those ones that while it won't be as bad as a Star Voyager investment, I think Tecmo Bowl is going to die out with our generation in terms of people thinking about it. It's just, I know you have people that still do homebrews and you still have torrents. That's getting an older crowd. You're not going to pick up a new generation on Tecmo Bowl at this point, at least in my opinion. So that's just what's going on, Ian, with the CIB. So I don't know if you have a lot of these CIBs at the Lunas, but you're going to have to start pulling from the shelves and not sell them for what you thought you could sell.
Yeah.
At least for these marquee titles. Maybe even like some of the Mega Mans will come up. I should search for the Mega Mans. Now I'm curious about the Mega Mans because I have a Mega Man 1 in the box. Would that go for a weird price, I wonder, on the NES? What do you think? Is it too weird? Are you surprised it happened this quickly or at all for some of this?
I mean, it's all very strange to me. I mean, I know I've sold probably countless copies of Contra in box, probably not at 9.0, you know, and well, I haven't maybe seen one in a while. But yeah, and I mean, even at its most popular, maybe 100, you know, to see it go for 1,000 something, that's wild.
But let's see, 5.0 Mega Man. Well, the Dr. Wright, the early version, sealed, they're going for like $500. Not sealed. So the prices went up on that because that used to be like between, I think, $150 and $200 for Mega Man in the box, for complete in box. So the later ones aren't as much. Okay, so I think this is going to happen with the marquee titles. It's already happened with like the early black box games. If you get the sticker seal for a lot of them, they've gone up in value to a couple hundred dollars, even for a beat up one. But I guess for some of these marquee titles, like again, Contra, I guess people want Mike Tyson's Punch Out for the weird crossover one we spoke about. Legend of Zelda is a shocker just because how many of those are out there.
Yeah. That's crazy.
They produced Legend of Zelda for years and years. I mean, and Zelda 2. They produced that for more, but Legend of Zelda came out in 87, so they probably produced that game for like 4 years before they stopped producing that. No, it's shocking to see a complete in box Contra game that for years and years and years be $60 to $70 maybe, now go for 13 to 15 times the value in less than a year. It just shoots up. That's not sustainable. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't abide with any laws of supply and demand at all. It's just as wacky as the Spider-Man 2600 to me.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
Because now, how many people are going to look at their shelf and be, oh my God, I have a Contra. Almost every major NES collector probably has a Contra in the box out there. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people that collect the subset Konami games or even just
right,
the Contra.
The silver boxes or whatever.
Yeah, I think I used to have an extra Contra in the box. I'm trying to remember my extra box copies of it. But I've had some of those silver Konami ones because they produce so many of those. So you think, should I get mine graded and just throw it up for the hell of it? The San Diego collection is coming. I'm going to do the San Diego collection at one point. The money pull is too strong at this point.
Yeah.
Hey, it's a bad year. We've all lost money this year with COVID. I've lost a pretty penny from COVID. So whatever I can do to make up for it, I'll be on board for that. All right.
Patreon.com/CU podcast. I do writings. We do the full video podcast. You get to vote in poll topics. Poll topics. What was this week's poll topic, Patrick? I do a hangout once a month.
You do, Ian. We have, in third place, I really thought this was going to hit, 10%. What video game should be turned into a Broadway musical? You don't want to hear Pat's impromptu singing? In second place, games that you are ashamed to be a fan of, 33%. And in first place, this was mentioned as a Q&A, possibly we said, oh, we'll put up for the poll. YouTube burnout in light of James and Mike Monday hiatus. Okay, so I guess there was an announced hiatus for James and Mike Monday. James and Mike Monday is the weekly Let's Play show with James Rolfe and his buddy Mike Matei. They've been doing it for like 8 years. It started, I believe it started during the production of the film, or pre-production, as a way to have more content on the channel. And now they've been doing it once a week for 8 years. So we're talking, that's like 400 plus episodes of this.
That's insane.
And people enjoy them. They do pretty well. Obviously, nothing does as well as AVGN, obviously. But people like them. So I guess they announced a hiatus, and it's going to come back potentially next year. I don't know. I haven't spoken to James about it. But YouTube is a grind. And even if a job seems to be easier than doing an entry level job or doing an office job, and I've run the gamut of jobs, so don't ever say, Pat, you never worked a job. I've worked supermarket jobs, I've worked college jobs, I've worked in shitty office jobs, I've worked in Suncoast, I've done everything. Even if it's a job you enjoy, at some point you come numb to it, or at some point you want to try to do something different. I mean, when you look at people that play on sports teams, get tired of playing for the same team. You look at actors that don't want to be on a TV show anymore. Say, oh, you're acting. Well, I've been doing it for 7 fucking years. I want to move on. Yeah. There's some actors on NCIS for like fucking 13 years. Like the goth character. She finally left. I'm done. How long can I do this fucking show for? How long? I got to do other stuff. I mean, it just happens. You get complacent. Not complacent. You just get too used to it. You want to do other things. You might get complacent and stick with the same job for so long. You know, it happens with radio shows. Happened with Mike and the Mad Dog. Was like the most famous radio show. They got sick of working with each other.
Yeah.
And they were never as good as getting, especially Mike Francesa, after they split up. But they were done. They were the biggest duo, biggest sports, radio guys, and they were done. We're just done. We're doing it for like fucking 20 years. We're done. It happens, people. You know, and I'm not gonna know why this particular show is not happening anymore, but burnout is a thing with any job. It's definitely a thing, and it's not shocking to want to see people step away and be like, okay, let's reassess, let's try something else. Plus, audiences change and move on with it, with everything.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
with bands break up at height of careers.
Yeah. I mean, going on, anything that you're doing, even if you're having fun, anything that you do on a schedule is, you run the risk of burnout, especially when people are expecting output. When it's expected, you can't just say,
I take a step back.
I enjoy doing the CE podcast, and I very much enjoy doing Extra Napkins, but there are definitely times where I just don't want to fucking record, but you've got to go and record, because at that point, you're expected to put out something on a weekly basis, and it's fun, but when you... Yes, burnout is a thing that can creep up on even the things that you enjoy doing the most. It just happens. I burned out on DJing, and I stopped DJing for years and years and years. And then I eventually got back into it. But, it's just anything fun that gets turned into work in any way, shape, or form suddenly has a kind of a cloud hanging over it.
I wouldn't say necessarily a cloud. That makes it sound a little dark. It's no longer just leisure, though. Obviously.
Sure.
You have to act like a professional, and you're on a schedule. It's a job. In a lot of aspects, and the money part. Once you get more comfortable, if you have the money to get by without it, then obviously it becomes less of a need to do it. I mean, look at Seinfeld. When Seinfeld decided to go away, that show was at peak popularity. Even its last season, everyone was watching it. They're offering him like $20 million an episode in like mid-90s dollars. They said, "No, I'm done. Don't need it anymore.
Right?
We've done it for like, was it 9 years, whatever it was. I'm done." And that's it. Now, maybe if there were gaps in between, like with Curb Your Enthusiasm, Larry David, who co-created Seinfeld, that show I think has been on now for like 20 years on and off, because there years.
But on and off, there are many, many gap years.
There's been like, I think, like 10 seasons in 20 years. So it'd be a few years in a row, 1 year off, two in a row, 2 years off. Like, that's how they've been doing them. And so Larry David's probably like, he's probably like, yeah, I'll do it if I want to do it.
It's a cartoon, but Venture Brothers runs the same way, and I think that's why Venture Brothers has maintained a high level of quality throughout its entire run. If they don't feel like working on it, they're like, well, we'll get at you. We'll let you know when the next season's going to come out. Might be a few years. And yeah, then they'll do it, and then they'll disappear again for a while.
Shocked. I actually think that now, South Park's now been, what, 23 years?
Jesus.
And I'm surprised they haven't taken a year off here or there for that, because they with the work they do, and it's so, they get those out literally sometimes minutes before airtime, they finish them. That the pressure on them to do those, I'm surprised they haven't taken a year off. Well, this is going to be a fun year. This fucking fall, holy shit. This is the year from hell. I can't imagine what they're going to cook up. Now I'm getting excited for that. So if it comes back, the show, it'll probably come back, be fresh, better than ever. I mean, I've taken, well, with the NES Punk stuff, I did a lot of those early on where I was doing almost one a month for a few years. I couldn't keep that pace up on those, even if I wanted to. Even if those were making money to sustain them, at some point, I would have said, okay, I've done, like, the same way with James, where James was doing two a month for a few years, which is nuts. At some point, even if you know people are enjoying them, your mind starts to turn to pudding. Mm-hmm. At some point, because you're going through the same grind over and over again, and it's not, especially when it's a creative endeavor, you're not making TVs, you're not pumping out something out of a factory. I think that's what some people, I'm not saying all, some people don't realize, if they're not on the creative side, things that, oh, put out a YouTube video, why can't you put out one a week or one a month? That's, I'm not making a product. Like, I'm not, I have to, like, make it in my head out of nothing. I'm conjuring up something out of nothing. It's magic in a way when you're creating entertainment. I'm not trying to talk down to people, but I don't think some people understand that it's not as simple as it looks sometimes when you're, oh, make a 20-minute video. That's simple to do. No, it's not. It's really not. It can be very, very difficult to do that. You can get writer's block. You can get editor's block, like me. Writer's block means I have problems. Editor's block. You can look at your stuff once you make it and be like, oh, that's not as good as I thought it was going to be. Or that's, I got to go back to the drawing board on that. Or there's a lot of roadblocks on the way. That's just how it works with any entertainment endeavor there. Yeah, with the Let's Play, there's less writing and preparation, though, but you're still, you know, if me and Ian had to do a weekly Let's Play, I think we would have killed each other. We did the Let's Play thing, and then unfortunately Ian got sick. I don't think that would have lasted a few years if we did that. I think we would have got sick of it.
I hated it anyways. I mean, part of it, I think, was because I was in pain, but my view was skewed. But trying to be naturally funny on the spot while playing games while in pain, it was awful.
Well, you were in pain. I couldn't stand it. I think we had some fun playing those Turbo games and some of those NES stuff.
Sure.
Like, but go back and watch the complete unnecessary Let's Play for the 2 months it lasted in the video.
Yeah.
For our 8 or 9 episodes there. Anything else to add?
No.
Ian, we skipped the scumbag seller.
Oh, we did.
Of the
week.
Week. Well, you week. Skipped it, but all right, Ian, what's the scumbag seller of the week?
Scumbag seller of the week is, my computer's freezing.
It's retro_ every time you can't get this. It's retro_gaming_nerd. Retro gaming
nerd.
Here
we go, yes.
And what are they selling, Ian?
They are selling game cases, which honestly I have no real huge issue with. They're reprinting, the art and putting them into hard game shell cases.
Plastic clamshells.
They're not trying to push these as official boxes. So that's cool. That's clear. They're not saying it's official in any way, shape, or form. These are not like repro boxes. They are just their own type of cases. However, there is something problematic with
this.
The Universal Sega 32X replacement case with Knuckles Chaotix art is being sold for $99.95.
That's $100.
That's $100.
Minus 5 cents. I don't think the psychology is working for that 99 cent thing.
No.
There. Hey, it's from close to my old stomping grounds in Hazlitt, New Jersey, by the way. All right.
It is just a plastic case. I've perfectly fine and nice looking plastic case, I'm sure. I'm sure it would protect your game no problem. And the artwork looks like it's printed in high quality, maybe a high quality print job. I am struggling to find where the $99 comes from here. Yes, where's the value here, Patrick?
It doesn't exist. So they're trying to trump this up because, well, Knuckles Chaotix 32X is a rare 32X game. That box and case, the box would be expensive. The game would be expensive. This is a generic plastic case, and you're printing out someone else's artwork, which, again, it's against terms of service, but Ian's not, there's not a problem with that. I have a problem with it, but it's really, the price is insane. And the fact that they put down 12 sold here, you have to ask yourself, were these 12 sold at $100? Or was it they sold at like what they should be charging, probably somewhere between $10 and $15, and then marked the price up after they sold to make, hey, people are buying these. I can't picture anyone spending $100 for a plastic replacement case.
And it's strange because you look at the other items they have for sale, and they definitely seem to be valuing the fake replacement case based upon the perceived value or rarity of the game. So if I look at the items for sale, there is a Fire Emblem Shadow Dragon case for maybe, I think it's just the case. Yeah, replacement case only, no game, for $7.94.
What?
Okay, that's not that bad, I guess, you know, in terms of price. And yes, on something like this where it is trying to look like the original case, I do have a problem with it that looks, you know, counterfeit bootleg.
So you went from what you went 8 to 100 for like probably the same similar
but
cost.
Then you look at these Universal SNES cases for Super Mario RPG and Chrono Trigger, and they're charging $100 for the cases. I mean is it made out of gold? No. It's mind-boggling.
$100 for Super Mario RPG Super Nintendo replacement case, and that doesn't even have, like, it looks more like a rental case in terms
of
the artwork.
These all look like rental
Chrono
cases,
Trigger
for the most part.
Legend of Zelda Link to the Past, Super Castlevania, these are all $100. No, I can't picture anyone. Replacement case for Zelda Majora's Mask, $100. Why are they all $100? Doom 64, $100. They're all at $100. Is there something going on here that I'm not aware of? Are these a limited supply of these?
There's and then all the 3DS and DS cases, which I do take an issue with because they are attempting to look exactly.
Those are
like,
more counterfeit.
Those are more like counterfeit.
You can pawn those off.
Those are only $7.64. Every single one of them, $7.64.
Now I got a problem. Yeah, here's a Shantae one. So it was a case. It's not the box, but okay.
I mean look, I understand using someone else's artwork to make money. I don't like that at all. All I'm saying is it's, you know, at least some of these don't look like they're not counterfeit. You could tell if you know anything about these games, you know that that's not the case that they came in. But yes, there are tons of counterfeit cases on here too, which is making this a lot worse my eyes.
Let me see what these actually cost in bulk. Video game replacement case Universal.
Yeah, like a Silent Hill 3 for $7.64.
Someone who sells these things? I never looked into these. I don't think they're expensive. Let's see, a Genesis one on eBay it's $4 for a Genesis shell. So if that's one on eBay, that didn't cost $4. Oh, here we go. PlayersChoiceVideogames.com. They sell Universal cases. Here we go. I never looked up this up. Oh, they're cheap. Oh, they're $2 each.
Yeah.
For an N64 one. They're $2 for one. You can probably buy them in bulk. $2 fucking dollars. So the amount of materials going into this, is a middleman printing out artwork and then putting them in and marking up, you know, even if you want to spend, you know, even if you want to go nuts and say, I'm going to charge $20 each for these. That I would consider exorbitant versus the amount of effort there's no effort to buy them. And be a middleman, but to print out the art and put it in. You want to say $15? Okay, fine. $100 is fucking nuts for these. When these cost $2 each. And that's just, and I didn't even look at bulk on this.
Oh, yeah. Bulk would obviously bring it down.
Let me find a bulk one. Oh, Amazon. Why don't I look at Amazon, Pat, you dumbass? On Amazon. Let's see. Transparent protector. I can't find these exact ones here on Amazon. But these are not expensive.
No, no, no. They're absolutely not expensive.
These are mass produced.
There was never any question about whether these were actually expensive or not.
Let me see if there's another one on eBay that's more reasonable for a universal case. Unless this guy's cornered the market and knows the production of these. Oh, no, they're cheap. I mean, you can buy me. You can get a lot of 10. They're universal. Super Nintendo, Genesis, 32X, N64. You can buy 10 on eBay for $40. So the production costs on these are probably a buck. The wholesale cost is probably like, you know, $1.50 on the other. These are cheap.
Yeah.
You can find these. You can go in business yourself and undercut them. Even working through eBay eBay inflated prices, you could do it. You can go and sell your own 32X one for $15 and undercut them. It's just gross. We never commented on any of these before because it's like, you're not really hurting someone. But once you start trying to trick people, put the value at $100 because they're like, I don't understand how you think you'd win doing this.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
Like, he's done well selling... Hell, he's sold... Well, this is more closer to counterfeit once you start selling the replacement Zelda. Like, once you start going to GameCube stuff, that's closer to counterfeit.
That's what I'm saying. GameCube, yeah. 3DS,
that's
DS.
Counterfeit. Switch. That'd be counterfeit.
When you start making them look exactly the same as they once were.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... Because even if the disc tray is different, you can swap it out for a real GameCube. Are the GameCube ones small? Yeah, they're smaller.
They're smaller.
But if you're selling a Zelda replacement case for the collector's edition on GameCube, and he sold like 200 of these fucking things, someone could swap this out very easily.
Sure.
With a crappy GameCube game and put it in. Say, I have the case for it. So, all right. So that's more scumbaggery here, I would say. Okay. Anything else to add for our retro gaming nerd in New Jersey? Central New Jersey?
Nope.
All right. Retro gaming nerd, you are the scumbag seller of the
week.
All right, that's it for the CU podcast.
That's it. We're done
on Cameo. I'm on Twitch. Ian's got the Yokoi Kids zine coming out. I'll buy a copy of that.
We should have that pre-order. We should have that up for pre-order next week, Monday. So I will be sure to pump it with the website on the next episode of the podcast.
Is it yoikoikids.com or is it a WordPress site?
It's a WordPress site, but all the information can be found on Twitter at yoikoikids.
Okay. All right. There you have it.
We're done.
We're done for the... I'm going to go eat my Colima quesadilla. Ooh, it's bacon and chicken, Ian. Not many offer that. You got to check out Colima. They're an up-and-comer. Well, they're probably popular where they're at, but they're a little bit far from here. Anyway. All right. Well, that's Ian.
That's me.
I'm Pat. I thought I had something else to announce. Oh, we're going to be virtual guests at the Long Island Retro Gaming Expo Uplink event.
At Uplink on August 9th.
Sunday, August 9th, 12:15 Pacific.
PST.
So we'll be, I'm not sure what we have planned for that. Maybe it'll be a pre-podcast. Maybe we'll do a few topics and we'll do some virtual Q&A. We'll have to see how that comes together. So that's already, less than 2 weeks away.
Yep.
All right.
All right.
All right, we will see you later. Thanks so much for listening.
Toodles.